It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for joining me on this, the first Sunday of August, the month that used to be vacation month for America, still is for Europe. Don't try to get any business done in Europe this month because you're going to find everyone is on vacation. But as we've talked about for years on the show, summer vacation in Illinois, and not in Illinois, in America, has been changed fundamentally with schools and colleges all going back, some of them as early as the first week of August, but virtually every school or college in America is back in business before the month of August ends, which means vacation season ends for tens, if not hundreds of millions of Americans early because kids have to go back to school or go back to soccer camps or football camp or whatever it might be. And we can thank a lot of this, as I said years ago on the show, we can thank a lot of this to football. And we can thank the NCAA for this because you can only have certain number of practices before college actually begins. And since the football schedule begins in early September, due to television and all of that's involved in that, it is not possible to have college start later and have all the practices that you need get in before college actually starts. So it all started years and years ago, and I'm going back 40 years ago with television on the NCAA, and now, of course, anyway, it's August is suddenly back to school month by the middle of the month, so it means it's back to work month for so many of us, but not this, the first Sunday morning in August. So I hope you have a great time in the great outdoors, and thank you for listening. And I'm going to take you to a controversy that hasn't happened yet, but it's going to happen. The Fish and Wildlife Service has asked for public comment on changing of the wetland ecosystem easements that have been, since the beginning of easements, been in effect. And it is the easement system is the backbone of the wetlands safety net in America, totally voluntary easements, and it enables landowners to put their properties under perpetual easement. They get paid a small amount of money to put wetlands, not their entire property, just wetlands, small wetlands, often 2 acres or less, which are the most valuable for wildlife. And particularly, I'm talking about the prairie region, which is the holy cradle, if you will, the birthright of literally most of the birds on this continent, the migratory birds, the Dakotas, Montana, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, are the place where so many tens of millions of songbirds and waterfowl nest. And the Wetlands Easement Program of the Fish and Wildlife Service, totally voluntary program, enables landowners to take a area they can't farm, a small wetland usually, and put it into a perpetual easement, and they're paid to do that. And the easement simply says that you can not drain that forever. You can farm it in dry years. You can hay it if the conditions permit, but you can't drain it. And that program has been oversubscribed almost from its inception. It has largely been funded by the Federal Duck Stamp Program, which is largely funded by hunters in America. It has been the single most successful perpetual easement program offered by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and it's totally voluntary. Wonderful. That all sounds great until now. Now there is a movement afoot, and it's actually been percolating for a while, but it's definitely coming to the surface now, to say that technology has changed, and with the arrival of tiling, and certainly tiling's been in effect, drain tiling, which enables you to move water underground for a long period of time, but it has not been in effect in many of the areas of the prairies where most of the easements exist, Montana, the Dakotas, for example. And landowners are claiming that they should be able to put tiles through their fields to drain the farmed areas. The problem with the tiles is they also drain the wetlands that are under easement. So no, a landowner is not going in and putting a drain directly into the wetlands. They are not changing the surface hydrology, but they are changing the underwater plumbing, if you will. So you are putting a drain tile in that effectively drains the surface area from the nearby lands. That includes the areas on which the wetland ecosystem easement is in place, and these were perpetual. And whether today's landowner did it or they bought land from a previous landowner that did it, meaning that land is encumbered, you cannot drain those wetlands. So there is a move afoot to change the law, which would basically gut the small wetlands preservation in America. The change in law says that you can put tiles in so long as you don't put them through the easement area. Well, that's not going to work. Think of having a fence, and on one side of the fence, you've got a deep hole, and on the other side of the fence, you don't. The water is going to run off the side of the fence that does not have the hole into the area that has the deep hole. So once you get outside the perimeter boundary of this wetland easement that is in place, you can do whatever you want. So putting a drainage tile in adjacent to the wetlands is the equivalent of draining the wetlands, which is a violation of the easements that were signed and for which landowners were paid for. Many landowners now are saying, well, I wasn't paid. I bought the land from somebody else. That doesn't matter. Other landowners are saying, well, the amount I was paid was so small, I never would have agreed to it. Or my father wouldn't have agreed to it in today's dollars. That doesn't matter either. And in fact, when you take into account inflation and that, in fact, a dollar in 1930 is worth about $17 today, or 1/17. So if you paid a dollar in 1930, it's going to take you $17, the equivalent to buy the same thing item today. That's what's occurring. Landowners are trying to change the law because farming equipment has so dramatically changed. Technology's changed. When most of these wetland easements were done, we didn't have this opportunity for peripheral draining away from them, although there is still a very long line of landowners all across the prairies who would like to put their smallest wetlands into conservation easements and to receive payment for that easement. But the tea leaves are saying that under this administration and this Congress and the huge pressure coming out of the Dakotas, that the wetland easement law is going to, they're going to try to change it, which essentially guts, absolutely guts, what has been 80 years of hard work and cooperation between landowners and the federal government. Voluntary, and I have to underscore, these easements were voluntary and they remain voluntary. You can farm them if it's a dry year. You can grow hay in them if it's a dry year. You just can't physically go in and drain them. Well, putting a drainage tile nearby is the equivalent of physically going in and draining them. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is charging landowners that are doing this with violating the easement, and the penalties are very severe. So this is all going to end up not in court, because the court is actually pretty clear on this. It's going to end up in the politics. Is the will of these states, and really it's Congress that has to change this, to change the law? If they do, I think we can say bye-bye birdie to millions of birds. And as you know, I'm not a raging environmentalist. But I think once you make a deal, and it's a perpetual deal, you've made a deal. You can't change the terms. That's what people are trying to do now. And it's going to be hugely, hugely impactful to wildlife, to flooding, to flood control, to downstream erosion, etc., if this is allowed to happen. So hopefully it's not, but it's percolating. Ducks Unlimited, among many, Audubon and others, are urging their members and anyone to contact Fish and Wildlife Service during this public review period and say, don't change the rules. They've been here for a long time. They've worked well. So there is actually a public comment period that's underway right now. And you can contact the Fish and Wildlife Service, and you can send a comment if you're in favor of having the wetland easements changed. Hopefully you're not. And if you're opposed to it, then please let your voice be heard. This time, it really matters. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. I hope you have, this is Charlie Potter, your host. I hope you have a great book that you can read on the remaining days in summer, somewhere where you enjoy going. It's the time of the year when I often do a book review. I'm not going to do it today, but I think I will next Sunday morning talk about a few books on the great outdoors, one of which I do every year, because if you haven't read it, you absolutely should read it, The Last Child in the Woods. And if you've read it, it's good to reread it again. It's one of the best books written about life in the outdoors and how it impacts our mental health, our physical health, and our children's health. Much more on that next week, though. In the meantime, smoke. The whole world's been talking about it. I've had the not-so-happy experience of living in it for a period of time. And in the West, we all lived it in Chicago. It came. It was terrible. It shut things down. I mean, every outdoor activity was canceled as we were under the highest air quality alerts you can have. So we've all lived in it. But I got an extra special treat, an extra special gift of smoke, because I also went west, and it turns out to be the coinciding with just one of the worst grass wildfire seasons the West has ever seen. The fires in Oregon and Washington, which are grass fires move faster. They're burning grass. They burn hotter, and they've put off more smoke. And actually, the smoke from these grass fires now has carried its way, believe it or not, all the way to Florida. But that's not what I'm going to talk about in the remaining time on the show. We've all been hearing about smoke. What you don't hear a lot about is the impacts on wildlife. They can be really significant, particularly at this time of the year when the fires are occurring, when so many birds cannot fly. Young birds of the year have hatched, adult birds are molting, and here comes the fire. And grass fires are where most of the birds nest, in grass, not in trees, in nests, in the prairies, on the ground. And the fires come through and there's no escaping. Wildlife impacts from fires are devastating in the near term. In the long term, they rejuvenate the landscape. Grass grows fast, full of nutrients. Trees, while they stand dead, I mean, there's still trees standing dead as testaments to the fires I mentioned a few weeks ago in Yellowstone National Park of 1988, nearly 40 years ago, 38 years ago. You can look at these trees standing there, black, scarred, straight. That's how long it takes these trees to come down. And all around it, though, there's new growth. In the case of the grass fires taking place right now, they are taking place in areas where deer and antelope roam, as they say, and deer and antelope can run. So they often can run ahead of these fires, and animals have an instinctive nature about how to get away, but oftentimes they become entrapped. Elk, deer, and antelope in the American West right now are running out of areas in some places to go. So the toll on them could be, in certain areas, very significant. Doesn't mean they won't bounce back quickly. They have that ability. But for right now, the carnage, and it is carnage, to animals and to birds is really significant in the areas where these fires are taking place, because they're grass fires and the speed at which they move. Something else which people don't talk about, cattle. Cattle don't quite have the instincts of wild game, and they stand there, and while they run at the end, they don't have the ability to outrun fires. They don't seem to have this instinct. And the fires are burning in some of the most heavily summer grazing lands in all of the American West. The toll is going to be significant, and it's sad to think, but as I'm talking to you, and as tens of thousands of acres are raging in Oregon, Montana, Idaho, Washington, that the loss of cattle is a consequence of these fires. And from a personal context, I actually saw firsthand when I was in the West what can happen. These fires move so quickly, and the cowboys try their very best to get the cows out of danger and move them into river valleys and places where they might escape. But then a fire breaks off and it encircles, and the next thing you know, there is no escape route. And you watch horses by the hundreds getting taken off the range as fast as they can, because horses are a more valuable commodity than cattle. And ranchers and cowboys and everyone who can is racing to get their livestock off this landscape, but they have nowhere to go because of the size of the fire. So horses are mostly saved, almost always saved. Wild horses, not so much, but domesticated horses, which ranchers depend on, they're saved. But there are probably a couple million acres right now in the American West, who's been sending their smoke, of course, to us here in Chicago, that have lost a lot. And it's more than just the smoke in the air. It's the physical loss of wildlife, of birds, and of livestock. And in the end, while the grass will come back, the loss takes time. And for people in the cattle business, insurance never covers the cost of a fire. This is a big blow. And we already know, and talking about the great outdoors, we know cows live outside and we know what's happening. The beef prices, because of the scarcity of cows due to droughts years ago, well, now the fires are going to have an impact as well. So on that happy note, and I always do want to end on a happy note, so I'm not ending right there. On that happy note, I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors in the last vestiges here of summer, even though we're just beginning August. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next Sunday morning with the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.